Hello and welcome to Not a Safe Space. This is Sabrina.
And Tabby.
Hi girl, what's going on?
Not much, how are you?
Nothing, so much going on in the world, huh?
I know, just in time for episode 40.
40. I know, like my birthday coming up.
Woo, 40, we've been doing this consistently for 40 weeks.
You know, that's funny. When I wrote at the top of my page 40 last night, I thought the same thing. I was like, fuck, there's only 52 weeks in a year. Like, we're almost there.
Yeah, we're more than halfway towards our 1 year anniversary.
I will say this is probably the only thing I've done consistently all year.
I think I have to agree with you on that.
Yeah, even work, I don't do consistently every day.
No, you get a day off from that.
Yeah, right? So how's everything going? What's new? How was your Memorial Day, first of all? You guys stayed at home or what you do?
Yeah, so we stayed at home. It ended up being kind of rainy, so that was okay. I just spent some time. I showed you the picture. I built a wall.
Yeah, you're building a wall. Big surprise. No, that's what I said. I was like, of course Dion was going to get his wall. You built a
retainer. Dion had nothing to do with it. This was all on me.
For retaining purposes,
yeah.
Aesthetic purposes, or trying to keep Mexicans out?
Well, I can't say all of the above.
You don't have any Mexicans roaming around.
No, well, actually I do, but I don't care. So they're good workers. Mm-hmm. So, no, you know that... that porch that I've got by the side of the house that's under the patio. So it turned into a completely shit show. Everybody was just throwing shit there, right? And I couldn't stand to look at it anymore. So I started cleaning it up, got the tables all nice and whatever, got it all organized, right? And then I remember when it rains, all the dirt washes down onto the porch because there's no retention because there's a hill coming down. So I was like, well, I have these rocks that were supposed to go back on our roof, on our chimney that we haven't done. So I was like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to build a wall.
Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah.
And so, I agree. When you say that area becomes kind of like a dropping zone, you're right. I mean, that's where the coolers end up, the tap, everything kind of ends up right there. And it's such a nice little nook that we've never taken advantage of at your house.
Right. And we've moved the swing out of the way. Now the swing is out on a tree and you could actually go down there and sit down and relax and enjoy the quiet without it being a fucking nightmare, because we had lawnmowers, weed whackers, what is the other thing? Pressure washers out there, just
everything,
junk,
yeah.
Just junk. So, oh, another fun thing that happened this weekend, I caught my dog on the roof.
How did he get on the roof?
So Maverick, our Great Dane, likes to get on the fucking roof.
Of your house or the pool
of
house?
Of my house.
Holy fuck. So two stories.
Yes, two story house. Literally, the patio that's outside our bedroom has a bench, and you can step on the bench and you can walk over it. So it's really easy to get on our roof.
Mm-hmm.
So our dog literally jumps up and goes on the roof. So I was sitting there this morning or that morning playing on Facebook. Then I hear pop, pop, pop. What the fuck? But I ignore it. Then I hear pop, pop, pop. I ignore it again. I look up, and that little fucker jumped off the roof onto the patio. And I'm like, you little shithead, you were on the roof again. This is not the first time our dog has been on the roof. Mind you, Maverick fell out of a bed and broke his fucking leg. Can you imagine what's going to happen when he falls off a fucking roof?
Yeah, holy shit. And how do you, does he bark when he's up there? Like,
no!
Guys just have to find him up there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's scary.
Like, da, 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 da. So now we have to put the bench down, because the last time it happened, the kids were there, found him, and they were trying to call him, right? To like, oh my God, what the hell's going on? He went to the far side of the roof over by the chimney by the front of the house.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
He wasn't just like, oh, I'm on the roof. I'm scared. I'm not moving. He's playing and pouncing and sounds like a fucking squirrel.
Yeah, that's crazy. He needs to be careful before he ends up in one of those little neck braces.
Oh, no, no, no. We're not saving. We're not doing a second surgery. $4,000 for that leg. That's it.
Yeah, was, right.
We chose a mixed breed because we didn't want to spend the $4,000 on a Great Dane. Well, and we ended up fucking spending the $4,000.
Right, right. So this makes me think, I thought about you this weekend. I was listening to our podcast from last week. We talked about, like, what have you done differently and coming out of the woods and all this other, you know, the metaphor of what we're doing in quarantine. And the only person that I could think of is that has actually done things in quarantine is you.
Is me?
Yeah. I mean, if you go back and listen to, and people are so easy to say, like, ooh, Sabrina is so, somebody asked me one time if I was a life coach, like, oh, Sabrina's so, she does all these things. The truth of the matter is you've gone into quarantine and now you've built this whole fucking aquaponics farm.
Right.
You're making fucking dough. You're canning mangoes, paint by number, reading Charlemagne's Black Privilege book. Like, you have really expanded your mind and challenged yourself, even if you didn't realize you were doing it, over the last 90 days. So
Well, thank you. I did not realize I was doing that.
I mean, think about it. Even the patio where you were like, I looked at it and was like, fuck, I'm going to make a change. So, like, it just, I thought about it this weekend and I was like, Tabby's actually fucking doing it.
Oh, thank you.
No, that's wonderful. Does it feel good?
Yes, it does. And I'm going to tell you, the reading The Black Privilege by Charlemagne the God, that was actually an inspiration from you. Not necessarily the book. Well, kind of the book, too, because I know you're a fan of his. But it got... I was like, Sabrina fucking reads all this shit, right? And you're always... I was like, but wait, she listens. That's how she gets all this shit done. So I took your advice, and I started listening to the books. And I'm on this new one by Ivanka Trump, Women Who Work. So I haven't gotten too far in it. We'll see how it is.
And I think, you know, where people might say, so, like, if they hear, ooh, well, Tabby's, of course, Tabby, this white Republican woman, is listening to Ivanka Trump. Like, it's so important. And something that Charlemagne talks about in his book is for us to read things that are outside the norm. And so where I am a white Republican woman, I probably wouldn't read Ivanka's book. But now that you've mentioned it, I probably will, because I feel like maybe I don't have anything in common with somebody that was raised so privileged.
Right.
But she is a badass working woman that didn't need to, right? She could be a Paris Hilton and just collected money her whole life. But her father did raise her to work. And let us know how that is. I'd be interested
and
to read.
I want to also say now, what's going to be funny is, like you said, because, oh, she's a white Republican, you know, wife or whatever, that I'm going to identify more with Ivanka. But really, when I listen to Charlemagne the God, based on the way that I was raised and brought up, I identify more with Charlemagne the God than I feel like I will identify with Ivanka Trump.
Right. I think so, too. Charlemagne is, I don't know, I'm just a huge fan of his. And I'm glad that you took the time to listen to his book. And I agree. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I love it. I just think that you have gone into the woods and you are living what we preached in the last episode. And I don't know if you even realized that
I
you
didn't.
Are.
Like, after the podcast, I'm going downstairs. And I don't know if you saw my post this morning about homesteading family. I'm going to go and make some fucking bread.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. Laura Ingalls down there in Deland, but you really are. I mean, 90 days ago, you weren't doing any of this stuff. So it's, and you're enjoying
it. Yes, exactly. I'm having fun and it's actually kind of relaxing. I get to work on cooking the food and then or canning it and preparing it for the family, making sure we're eating healthy. And then I still get to listen to all my books on tapes and my podcast. And it's just a good time.
Right. And I'll say, you know, in the beginning of the quarantine where I said I was going to challenge myself to read more. And instead, what I found is, like you said, of releasing and saying, you know what, maybe reading is just not my thing anymore. I'm going to listen to it because that's how I get things done.
Right.
And that's what I like. I like somebody reading or talking to me. And what's the fucking difference as long as I'm listening and comprehending it the same way?
You might actually be learning it better if you're being told, because then you're actually listening more or going back and going, oh, what the fuck did he just say? I got to go back. But do you feel like when you're listening to a book on tape that you end up feel like at some point you're getting talked to at so much, like you got to turn it off? Like
sometimes. And I have to catch myself from spacing out too, right? Like you have to pay attention. And so, and I do rewind and I'll be like, ooh, I just spaced out there. What did she say? And I'll go back and re-listen to it.
Right.
I'll also like screenshot a certain section if it sticks out in my mind, kind of similar to if you read a book and you highlight or write something because it was a powerful moment. So that way I know like, ooh, what did they say there? What did he, and like I've quoted Charlemagne a lot and gone in and highlighted what he said and taken notes on it so that I can help retain it.
I love the Charlemagne's quote, put the weed in the bag, man.
I know, right? Do the fucking work.
And it's true, man. I just, oh, I love it.
And that's reminds me of, and that's something I'm truly ready to talk about, but we will at some point, is an argument I got in with my son this weekend where he said something like, well, I have an opinion and my opinion matters. And I looked at him and I was like, it doesn't. You know what? You're 18 and put the fucking weed in the bag. Do your job. Right. Start at the bottom.
Work your way up.
And put the fucking weed in the bag, which I can't say that to my kid. But that's basically what Charlemagne was saying. Like, humble yourself. Start from the bottom and put the fucking weed in the bag. You'll be a big dog when you put the work in.
Exactly. You don't just wake up one morning and you're a fucking big dog. That's not how it works.
Right. Exactly. So our weekend, of course, was a boat weekend. We went out Saturday and Sunday. Randy and Krista were here. It was a great weekend. It was a great weekend of kind of what our life will be on the weekends anytime. So that was great to see. And we all enjoyed it. The kids had a great time. The thing that stuck out the most for me was, first of all, the return of the backwards hat. My husband stopped wearing his hat backwards, which he said he stopped doing because he felt like he was getting older. When I turned around and I saw him with his hat backwards, because you have to because you're going at such a high speed, all of a sudden I was like, holy fuck, I'm so attracted to him right now.
All because of the hat.
So, and I told... Yeah, it's just, well, that it's like the hat and the wind, and he was happy, and it was like the return of the backwards hat, and I was like, I'm really into fucking Captain Nate with the backwards hat. I'm into it.
Are you sure it's not just the power of the boat you're feeling?
I mean, everything, right? The engine roaring underneath me, right? It was just, you know, a combination of all of it where I was like, I'm fucking into that man at this moment.
So did you feel giddy like a teenager?
I did. I felt like super attracted to him and super turned on by him. And just, it just, you know, 16 years together, it doesn't happen every day, right? You don't wake up and have that feeling, but then to turn around and just see, I was like into it, fucking into it. I wish that everybody else would have gotten out of the way so I could have taken a picture of him. He just, and I told him afterwards too. I was like, hey, by the way, into it. If you want to have sex with me on that boat with your hat off, with your hat on backwards, I'm down.
There you
just
go.
Let me know.
I was just getting ready to
turn off the camera in the driveway.
You plan on christening that boat.
Oh, it's going
to
happen.
I expect it to happen.
And on the dock. So, Erica, if you're listening, just don't come in the backyard that night.
Oh, no. You can't do it at the house. You and him have to go out on a romantic night sail or whatever and fucking do it under the stars properly.
I plan on it. And at the dock. And on the
and
dock.
And everywhere in between. But you still have to have, like, your official romantic one.
For sure. I'll let you know when it happens.
Right. Don't just be a dirty whore.
Yeah, right? So the other big thing for the boating weekend is that, you know, Randy and Krista came down. And Randy, if, you know, everybody in my personal life knows, but maybe not on the show, is that Randy is my little brother from another mother. We met when he was 19. I was 22, newly divorced. And we both needed family, right? He's from Michigan. I'm from Virginia. I needed someone to help around the house and help me with Ethan. And he needed somebody to cook dinner and to care for him and to be a big sister to him. And that's what we've been the last 15, 16 years. I've known him about a year longer than me. So we never knew if they were going to have kids, because Krista has been working so hard to become a doctor of pharmacy and become a pharmacist. And I kept thinking, you know, they would be such great parents. They've been great aunt and uncles, best pals, all of this to my kids, to her own nieces and nephews, to Randy's nieces and nephews, that we just didn't know if it was in the cards for them. And it happened, and they are expecting. Aww, and so this
congratulations.
Yeah, and Krista came, and she's got a belly bump now, and so now it's like it feels real. And the transition of the change, where I've always joked that Krista was, one day was going to get fed up with me, because if I need Randy, if Ethan needs Randy, he's always going to come for us, always. Randy's never not been here when I needed him, even if it's just for something like this wall in my office he did while I was at work one day. Oh. You know, I told him I wanted it done. All of a sudden, my garage coat opens on a Friday. I come home from work and it's done. Like, he's just there from the smallest thing of, hey, I need to talk to you. Can you spend 20 minutes with me? He'd drive an hour and a half to do it to anything. Aww. That I figured at one point his wife would get fed up with me and was like, all right, enough's enough. But this weekend, in just this natural transition of my wants and desires don't matter anymore, as they should not. And I even feel the same way. Like, she is carrying one of the closest people in my life's little daughter. And what she wants matters more than anything to me right now. You know, is she comfortable? What does she want? What does she... And I could see him, he's not a very affectionate person, his hand on her belly, holding her hand as she got into the boat, washing her feet so just in case she slipped, and just these little things that I can see that is transitioning him into fatherhood already, right, which I'm so excited about. It was so cute. And you don't want to point those things out to him, because then he'll make a joke and be like, whatever. Right. But it's happening, and it's so nice to witness and see it.
And he has no control over it. It's just his natural instincts that are taking out. Protectiveness is really kicking in.
Right. And his maternal, is it still paternal? Yeah, instincts to protect his, which is, you know, his daughter and his wife. And that was just really cool to see. And then it helps we're all a little tanner this weekend and got a little bit of vitamin C, and so everything's great. Yeah. So overall, Memorial Day was great. I thought it was great for the corona to have a big weekend to kind of encourage people to get out and start seeing everybody again. Yes. I am interested to see if all these pool parties that have been reported on the news, these beach parties, these barbecue parties, these block parties that police have had to break up, will there be a spike in sickness, right? Because, I mean, this is the test of, all right, were they right or were they wrong?
Exactly, just to see what ends up happening.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was always in the back of our mind, but we were boating on our own boat, but we went to an island and there were other people there and we spoke to them. I mean, we weren't hugging or touching them, but nobody was necessarily putting a circle around themselves and staying 6 feet away. True.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see the reactions to it all.
That definitely will be interesting to see what happens.
So let me quickly transition to one of the last items on our thing that I listed, changes. Okay. And we'll just talk about it quickly and then move on because there's so many other things going on right now. So Florida transitioned to phase two. The gyms are reopening. Did you see that Universal and Universal's applied to reopen as of June 5th?
Yes, I did see that on the news.
Yeah, Disney here in Florida, along with SeaWorld, is applying to reopen as well. I think it's their plan includes, this is the part that I think is fucking stupid. Every guest and every employee has to wear a mask. If anybody in this state or in America has been to Universal or Disney in June outside in 98 degree weather, and they think it is safe to walk around in a fucking mask,
they've got another thing coming.
Yeah, I mean, the heat stroke alone, I think, what are they going to do to their employees that are standing outside in this heat? Where I've seen the employees in a department store with the AC crank up just say, it's hot under
here. It's very hot under here. Like I told you last week, I wore one for about 45 minutes. And by the time I was done, I couldn't breathe. I was gasping for air. And
right.
I think I have good lung capacity. So imagine someone who doesn't have good lung capacity. What do you think is going to happen to them?
Yeah, the little children that can't, maybe, you know, even younger than Lorelai, that are going to Disney, that on a regular day, if you look at people's Disney photos in June, their kids' faces are flush with red cheeks, and now we are masking them.
Right. What I mean, they're going to pass the fuck out. You're going to have people fainting left and right. And unfortunately, it probably won't be Floridians, because Floridians are going to go, No. We know how fucking hot it gets down here. We're not doing that shit, right? We love the mouse, but not that much.
Yeah, I'd rather see them just limit capacity and let people walk around and freely breathe than risk heat stroke and other things that might come from
it. Well, then what does that say about those companies then? That they're not willing to take a loss and more of their profits and then limit the capacity, then shove them all in with masks.
Right. Or they feel like they won't be approved without that requirement, right? Because they can't just open. They have to now apply to open. And they have to fill out these requirements. So maybe they're like, okay, well, if we say that they'll wear masks, I don't know. I just don't think it's... I'm sweaty right now. My titties are sweaty and I'm in the AC.
I just can't imagine it. And then can you imagine being there? What if you lost a mask on a roller coaster? Is there going to be another employee saying, here's another mask, you need to put one on?
Right. Yeah. And then what if you just need a breather from it? Is there a safe zone or an unsafe zone where people without masks that just need to let their face breathe and get fresh air can go? I don't know. I think it's a bad idea. Miami Dolphins turning the Hard Rock Stadium into a drive-in.
Okay.
Nice. I saw an article on that with Twitter. So they can fit 230 cars in and then allow the patrons to drive in onto the field. Obviously, they'll cover the field and then play a movie on the big screen. I thought that was pretty creative, a way to get money into the stadium, get workers working, and then also just kind of give back to the community, right? Like, we have this giant stadium over here for the Jaguars. Give back to the community. Make a movie night just like they're
exactly
doing.
I think that's a great idea. I hope drive-ins come back, because I feel like that would be an experience that kids would really enjoy, and it would make going to the movies exciting, where now, when you go to the movies, you're like, I gotta pay fucking $40 a person to get in there. You gotta pay all this money for the food to sit in the seats. And people are chomping and talking, texting and dinging. And it can be really annoying. So the ambiance is gone. Hopefully, like, the drive-in will provide a new ambiance. As long as they do it correctly. Like, a big screen, the cars separated out. Mm-hmm. And kind of like Greece.
I think it is a good idea. I think it's a good idea. And you're right. It's like nostalgic, right? Of going a little bit back mm-hmm. in time of just a different experience of what a movie theater could be like.
They should set it up kind of like Greece and make it a 50s night. And then like everybody show up in the hoop skirts and...
I know. But that's us being old. Could you imagine our kids actually doing
it? Yeah, I can. I mean, our kids dress up like 80s and think they're nostalgic.
I know, right? Right. So, hey, let's go on to, you want to talk about George Floyd at the moment?
Let's talk about George Floyd since he's the hot topic right now.
Yeah, so George Floyd was a resident of Minneapolis, Minnesota. He passed away under police...
brutality.
Restraints.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. There was a phone call or a call made to the police about a possible forgery. And the police pulled him over and he matched the description. Now, I couldn't find whether or not the forgery was correct or if he was the one or if he was the right suspect, but that was the call that the police responded to.
So forgery for what? Did he forge a check? Did he forge a die?
I saw something about a check or maybe fake 20s or something like that. You know how they scan it, but either way, just forgery, not even a violent call, you know, or a, you know, suspicious man or endangering. The video that was released, well, we all know that George Floyd later died under the police restraints, and a video later surfaced of him, about a 10-minute video, handcuffed on the ground with a police officer's knee on the back of his neck, with him telling the officer that he could not breathe and asking him not to kill him.
And he was also, there were bystanders who were saying, he can't breathe, you need to back off, you need to back off. And there were four fire officers that were fired in that situation.
Mm-hmm. One of the bystanders said, which I wrote down here, that said, he is human, bro. I mean, that's clearly what he said. Like, it's you, like the officer just forgets that this is a human man.
Right. This is about people abusing power.
Right. Right. The article that I pulled up today from, I think it was CNN. Yeah, CNN was written from a previous police officer who is now a reporter. And, you know, the way that he was describing it is that it's a catastrophic failure of training for the city of Minneapolis or whatever police department these four officers worked for, along with an unconscionable failure of culture created by the department, that he as an officer worked for a police department that trained out racism, trained out unconscious bias, and trained their police officers to be fair, equal, and to live under, what was the thing that I sent you? It says, after 40 years in law enforcement, I know it's possible to do the job with a generous heart, a sound mind, a clean conscience, and boundless humanity. I've been honored to lead officers who all did the same. I know that it can be done. In fact, there's a single manual of instructions that tell you how to do it, and it's the United States Constitution. Any department that bases its values and training on that document does so without compromise.
Yep.
I thought that was great because I struggled with when you asked to talk about this today of, well, what's the point? Because I don't have an answer to it.
And you're not going to have an answer to it, right? I mean, these men abused power and George Floyd suffered for it. It was unconstitutional. A man's life was lost. And you know what? We do need to talk about this because we need to talk about the fact that you have such extreme cases with police brutality. And I'm not just saying white cop versus the black victim, right? It's just human versus human, right? We have cops that take advantage of their power and for a very, very long time, there has been no consequences for it. And I mm-hmm. feel like society is changing. Society is coming together and saying, no, we will not accept that type of behavior. You still have to follow the Constitution. There is still the law of the land. George Floyd was entitled to an investigation, to be proven guilty. He was denied his constitutional rights because some arrogant asshole thought he was better than him and put his knee on his throat, which there was no physical need for it. That man was on the ground, he was handcuffed, and he was not resisting.
Right.
I could understand if he was resisting and trying to constantly get up, but he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing everything that he was supposed to do, and these officers took it upon themselves and their inherited racism or what their abuse of power, and they ended up taking a man's life.
Yeah. And doing so without even, he knew he was being recorded. And that officer had no issue with what he was doing.
No, did you see right? the way he looked at George when he had his mm-hmm. knee on his throat? Like, it made my stomach curl, Sabrina. I'm going, that's a fucking monster. He just doesn't mm-hmm. care.
And there's a part of me, so that thought, like I wrote down here that, you know, some people can say, well, you know, we watch these videos and maybe, you know, as a black man, you need to know that you can't be mad. You can't show that you're angry, that you're being treated unjustly, that you can't behave like you're being fed up. You can't just do what you're supposed to do, boy, and stand there and let the cop mistreat you. Where really, how about they've just had a fucking enough? And it's not fair. And this guy wasn't even reacting and saying, you know, like, as far as we can see, there wasn't. I can just now understand, because I have said that, like, even to my own son, if a police officer comes up to you, stand in line and you do what you're right. told. But at what point is enough enough when you're just walking down the fucking street and because you're black that you're told to stand in line and put your hands up and do this? Fuck you. And so now I get like it's.
You understand that there is the racism in it. Right.
Mm-hmm. And my nail lady said to me after the last gentleman up in Atlanta, that she realized she's Vietnamese and her son is mixed with black, he's half black, that she said, you know, I've never once thought that I need to raise him as a black man because he does look black. Uh-huh. And for her, being Vietnamese, she didn't feel like she's ever felt racism the way that she now realizes that will be a part of her son's life. And that scares the fuck out of
right.
her.
Right. And
that you have to raise your children to know, hey, you're a target, even if you're the best man in the world.
Right.
You're a target.
And it's sad. And, you know, we need to figure out a way to change that. Right.
I think that's why I like the CNN article and why I felt more comfortable talking about this, because coming into it where I felt like I have no answers. I like what this guy says where, yeah, maybe the everyday person, we can't cure racism or unconscious bias from house to house. But when we are selecting and hiring our police officers and creating these police departments, you can create a culture of fairness right. and hold your officers to those standards, because they hold a job that could take our life. They all have guns. They all have tasers. They all have the ability to handcuff us and then treat us in any way they right. want. And the simple answer is it's got to be fixed in-house.
Yep.
Where you can't, it's to say that we can end racism in this country, that feels hopeless.
Right. It's a step-by-step thing, right? Certain things have to be done. Like you said, the training with the officers. But, and I'm not defending these particular officers, okay? Because I have mm-hmm. officers that are in my family. I know you have
officers in the yeah.
family. Mm-hmm. And the shit that they have to deal with. So it's not just this particular case. But the call before that, the call before that, the call before that, the call before that. People, stop being fucking idiots. Pull your right. shit together so the cops aren't constantly dealing with domestic abuse. Pulling this drunk mm-hmm. woman off of this man who's trying to stab each other, and they have to protect themselves from being stabbed. Right?
Right.
So someone who right. they go in and have a perception that it's not someone who's dangerous turns out to be dangerous, and it could be life-threatening for them. So when they get into a situation like this, even though George Floyd wasn't being dangerous, but last time they thought someone wasn't dangerous, it fucking bit them in the ass, and now they gotta overcompensate. Yeah. So it's not just the George Floyds. It's all everybody. It's all the calls.
Right.
Guys, pull your shit together. Act like adults, right? I mean, mm-hmm. the police job is so much harder than it ever used to be. Because you're dealing right. with so much fucking bullshit.
Right, yeah. I agree with that. And I am a family member of a police officer, and I support the police, and I support, just anybody in uniform that their overall goal is to protect our community. Unfortunately, there are departments. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if you listen to the Serial podcast, it talks about the police department of Cleveland and the justice system in Cleveland. It is fucking corrupt and it's racist, and they attack and hurt and falsely imprison Black men. Mm-hmm. all the time, and it's not okay.
No, it's not. And very much, and just like Trump says he needs to drain the swamp, this part of that swamp is our local police.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, locally, and I'm glad that they're rioting and protesting in that city, because enough is a fucking enough.
Okay.
And that's our right to protest. And sometimes it sucks that it becomes violent. But let me be very honest. When people say that it's not okay to protest and it's not okay to do this, but we all support and teach our children about the fucking Tea Party and the fact that as Americans, we threw that fucking mm-hmm. tea into the water, that was violence and destruction, because we wanted to prove a point about taxation. It's no different.
Okay. So I agree with protesting, 110%. But the rioting, the damaging the buildings, throwing the rocks, throwing the bottles, becoming violent, I don't agree with that part of it, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I understand that. And I think that, you know, that side of it ends up covering up the right. real issue, because then we start arguing about the fact that, well, there's destruction and there's small business owners
or
you know, small business, yeah, that are a lot of times are minority business owners are getting hurt by doing that. But again, I just get aggravated about the fact that we celebrate the Boston Tea dumping when it was exactly the same thing. It was Americans protesting, and okay. we destroyed it. And
yep.
we threw it in the fucking ocean, and we wave our flag, and
we have
taught our children
and
that for
I'm
decades.
I'm going to say this to you, Sabrina. On one of our other podcasts, when I was upset about the stay-at-home orders, and because people were being falsely imprisoned for walking around, right? You told me that reaction was acting like a toddler. And we need to be adults.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm not saying that you protest and you throw a brick at a wall and that you shouldn't follow the consequence. There is a
right.
consequence for every action. So I'm not justifying even those people in the Boston Tea Party, which I'm sure people died that day, right? And people were arrested that day. And as you should, your civil rights allow you to
right.
protest civilly. It doesn't allow it to be violent. What I don't like is when they say, well, now look at these Black people being violent, when in my history books, our white colonists chucking fucking tea into a harbor, and we're like, whoa,
right.
look at America.
No.
Don't make it a race thing. Don't make it that was, the tea party was not right. That the tea throwing was not right. And throwing fucking bricks and setting buildings is not right.
It absolutely is not right.
And don't act like we're not above it, because that was the base of our history.
What that taught us was, and that's why we have the laws that we have, is that so you can make societal changes without violence.
Right. Right. But, yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, because the violence and the riots, it doesn't help. It didn't help with, you know, back in the early 90s when they were rioting in L.A. And it doesn't help anything. And it gives people an excuse to say, well, look at them. Look at them running a fucking mock. No wonder.
It ruins their cause and their message. You know, you've got people who are going, oh my God, this is so wrong, George Floyd. We feel so horrible. We're on your side. We're going to fight with you to get justice. And then they turn around and do this.
Yeah. I guess the part where I also can play devil's advocate is I know how I feel when I get so, so, so angry that I just want to hit something. I want to do something. And these are these men and women's children being murdered. George Floyd was somebody's son. He's somebody's dad. He's somebody's brother. He's somebody's friend. And they've had fucking enough. And so then there's the other side where I'm like, I fucking get it. I get it. Now, when you're stealing shit, I don't get that. But that anger to just react.
I get it, but you have to be conscious enough of your own body and your own emotions to know, if I am in this situation, I am going to do something that is going to be detrimental to what I actually want to achieve. You're going to be mad, you want to hit someone. Instead of throwing a rock at the fucking cop, turn around and punch the tree.
Yeah, I guess the problem is, there's a reason why somebody like Dr. Martin Luther King is so unique, right? Because he was able to go through some of the worst times of racism and segregation and remain so calm. And I don't know how somebody does that, because if my son was laying there on the ground and there's a video of him being suffocated, and if that was a fucking dog, white America would be going crazy about this inhumane dog being mistreated. It's a black man on the ground, and everybody says, oh, well, I wonder what he did.
And if that is your response, fuck you. Because he is a man. And he is still a human, and he had a life, and nobody knows if he did or didn't do anything. And fucking A, I don't give a shit if he did commit forgery. Are you kidding me? Forgery? Really? That doesn't cost you your life.
Right. And even if he was restraining and putting up a fight beforehand, the 10-minute video of him handcuffed on the ground, he is no longer a threat to you. Why do you have your knee on the back of his neck
for 7 minutes? Issue of abusing power.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. And so then... in New York City, Amy Cooper, did you see that the white lady was walking her dog in Central Park over the weekend, and a black man was bird watching in Central Park, and he asked for her to put her dog on a leash, which is the rules of the park, and also for him as somebody who is bird watching, these people that let their dogs run amok ends up scaring the birds away. It scares the birds on the ground, and that is, and they got into an altercation, just yelling at each other. And he said, "Okay, well then, fine. If you're not going to do that, well then I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was a threat that he had a way to deal with people like her. Now, as a woman in a park by herself." To any man saying that to me, I'd be like, okay, well, what do you mean by that? Now I'm a little frightened.
So threatening.
Hold on. I'm gonna find it. Because he actually said what he said. He says, look, if you're going to do what you want to do, I'm going to do what I want to do. but you're not going to like it, he told her. Before, and then he starts pulling out dog treats out of his pocket. Because he said what dog owners hate the most is people feeding their dogs. So for the people that he asked to put on, he now feeds their fucking dogs treats then. So that their dogs aren't running around scaring the dogs. But she was saying, okay, well, when he said that, I didn't know what was going to happen.
Right.
I can give her that, right? But then when she called the police and said, or said, I'm going to call the police and tell them that a black man just threatened me. That changes the fucking game.
Oh, man.
You didn't say that a man threatened me. You looked at a black man and said, well, all right then. I'm going to tell them that a black man just threatened me.
And that tells you that she, even though she's stating facts, what that tells you is that deep down, she thinks that by calling the cops saying a black man, she's going to get a better result.
Right. And a result that could threaten and, his life.
There was no reason for that. She could have either just took her dog and left, or she could have put the damn dog on the leash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, put your dog on the fucking leash like it says. And you don't have to fight with
the strange black man or the strange man or anybody. Because guess what? When he turns around and said that and you interpret it as a threat, now you're the victim? Give me a break. You started this shit. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, in her saying, I'm going to tell the police that a black man is threatening me. She knew exactly why she was saying that. She knew exactly what it could mean to him, especially her being a white female in the privilege and power that she holds. And she lost her fucking job. And she had her dog taken away from her because she had rescued that dog. And they came and took that fucking dog and
now,
her job fired
her. Why didn't her job fire her?
Because they said she was a racist and they did not want to be associated with her.
See, now that makes me wonder, can you actually, legally, can you be fired for being a racist?
Yeah, I guess. I
or
mean,
that's
she,
not why
she
they
did.
Fired her. They found some other loophole because
cause or
legally,
something, yeah.
You can't be fired for being a racist.
Right. She said, I'm in Rambler. There is a man, African-American. He has a bicycle helmet and is recording me and threatening me and my dog.
Crazy.
Right. And just left it at that. So then, you know, the police will come searching for a black male that fit that description.
And pick up somebody else.
And
Not even the right guy. And now they and now the cops have the wrong perception of the story.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And she put his life in danger.
She did.
100%. Yeah. So,
So, I wanted to tell you something. So, when I started doing research over this, I did some research and I found this information about the number of people shot to death by police in the U.S., from 2017 to 2020, right? And it's divided by race, white, black, and Hispanic. So in 2017, 457 people, white people, died by the police. Blacks was 223 and Hispanics was 179. In 2018, 399 white people were killed, 209 black people were killed, and 148 Hispanics. In 2009, 370 white people were killed, 235 black people were killed, and 158 Hispanics were killed. And then so far, as of March in 2020, 42 white people were killed, 31 black people were killed, and 13 Hispanics were killed. And what I realize is from 2017 to now, and the last date was March of this year, our police shooting numbers are going down. And I think that has a lot to do with our society stepping up and saying, we're not going to accept this behavior anymore.
Yeah, I hope so. What worries me is those numbers don't say how many unjustified murders were at the result of the police. You know, that's not telling us that, yeah, I mean, based on that number, there's been less black men, but how many of those men weren't actually guilty of anything? And how many of those men didn't have a weapon in their hand? And how many of those men were killed under restraint and in the care of the police? You shouldn't have to worry that a police officer is going to kill you.
And it doesn't say that for the whites or the Hispanics either.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the problem is, and I don't know the numbers, but I rarely hear of a white man being justifiably killed by a police officer. And quite honestly, you don't hear about Hispanics either. And I think really that might be because there's a lot of minority groups that are just pushed under the rug. Right? Like Black Lives Matter. Yes, but all minorities do. And are they suffering the same way that the African American community is suffering? And have we just not made it
a
topic? Yeah.
Let's be really honest. You know, you have two situations where a black person is killed by the police and a white person is killed by the police, both unjust, both unfair. Who do you think is going to get the better ratings? You know, we have, and I don't know the numbers like you said, but I'm sure there's white people out there being killed by the police that aren't getting their fair share of justice, and there's not going to be anything about them on the TV, right? Because it doesn't sell.
Or it's settled quickly compared to a black man where, you know, if it happens to a white man where their family quickly act and the police will quickly respond to it, compared to when a black man and the police are going, oh no, well he was resisting. And the only way to prove that he wasn't are by these fucking videos, right? Because if it wasn't due to these videos,
you wouldn't know.
Yeah, we wouldn't know. We'd have to go based on the word of a police department that might be corrupt, and maybe they don't even realize, you know, because they just might not be aware that they have some internal bias about certain people, and it might just be the culture. And if it wasn't because of these videos, we'd have no way to protect these men and say, this is not fair. This is happening. And how long has it been happening where we all just weren't aware of it?
No, like, this isn't a new thing. You know, it makes me think about what Charlemagne the God said in his book. He put a perfect example. Him and his wife and children were in a black Escalade getting ready to unload some stuff off onto a dock to go fishing, right? To get onto a boat. A white family was parked basically right next to them doing the exact same thing. But you weren't supposed to park that close to unload, right? So there was a black officer who came over, ignored the white family, and went straight to Charlemagne and his family and said, you can't unload here, and started giving him trouble. To which Charlemagne said, look, I'm driving the exact same car as this man, and that family is white, and you completely overlooked them. Why? And the cop even had to say, you're right, I did. Yeah, no, so he did. Good. He's like, yeah, you're right, I totally did. So I don't know if it's their training or is it inherited, because I don't know, but even a black man was going to be racist towards another black man.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's scary. It's scary. You know, I like I said, this article that I read makes me feel like you got to fix it. We can't fix it nationally. Like, there's no way for us to flip a coin and change something that's been embedded in a lot of us, right? Fear is passed on from generation to generation. Hate is passed on from generation to generation. Racism is passed on, and it goes both ways, where I can understand why a black family would would feel a certain way towards a white family because it is unfair. And that breeds this hate right. against each of us. There's no cure for that at this point, but where we can fix it is the people that are holding the power, and it's got to come from the police department. I expect my police officers to lead by example and be the best example. And that seems doable.
I agree with that. And then I also think that it also comes from our society and on the family level, right? So if you are scared of black people and you're white, go talk to some, go talk to a black person, right? And have open conversation. Yeah. Both sides need to open up, come together and communicate, because otherwise you, both sides are acting on fear and standardized stereotypes of each and not understanding everybody. You know, I have experienced reverse racism. I got pulled over when I was 16, 17 years old by, it was a stop. A black cop pulled me over, and because my driver's license had been moved to Florida and I forgot my wallet, and Sabrina, I'm 10 feet away from my house. He made me, he wrote me a ticket. And mind you, we're in a black neighborhood because I lived in a black neighborhood. I was the only white girl in my neighborhood growing up. So this black officer assumed I was doing something I wasn't supposed to be doing. I said, my house is right there. He called me a liar and wrote me up a ticket and then said, you need to come, you know, you can go get your license, but this is your court date. So I had to go grab my mother, grab my driver's license, drive back around, go through the whole checkpoint again, and have this whole fucking debate. When it could have just been, you're a young kid, yep, got it, go home, don't fucking forget your license again.
Right. Well, I don't know. I mean, I do think it comes from, you know, in families. I can't, it's hard for me to think about reverse racism when I feel so privileged, right? Because I know that I've spoken to an officer in a certain way and I can do that. And I don't feel like I'm feared. Where if I was a black woman, I did it in March when we left the Gate River Run, and some officer said, like, could you guys hurry this up at the end of the fucking race? And I was like, no, physically I can't.
Right.
Asshole. And the three mixed people next to us just kept walking, and I stopped and I took a picture and I was like, what a fucking dick. And Nate was like, you know what you just demonstrated, right? And I was like, what? And he was like, your white privilege, because you noticed the other people just walked faster. Where the guy was being a dick, it was the end of the shift and he wanted us out of the fucking way. I don't understand that fear. So I can't, it's hard for me to say that I can experience racism when I don't have that fear that my life will be taken.
And I can understand that. My experience is a little different. I grew up in a black neighborhood.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what it's like to be the outsider.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. For sure.
And I was very lucky that most of the girls that I hung out with were nice enough, right? Like, I had friends. I mean, ended up not being lifelong friends, but. You know, I had some problem, you know, they fucking run me around a bit.
Right. Yeah.
Because I was the white girl and they could do that because last thing I need is six girls jumping my ass because I said or did something wrong.
Right. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So, speaking of, I made those girls my friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you do what you have to in the society that you're born into. Right. And you adapt as you feel like you have to. I hate when people, it's survival of the fittest and survival of however you need to survive. So that's understandable. So we've mentioned Charlemagne a few times, and he's made the cover again on a few topics because he interviewed on the Breakfast Club Joe Biden.
Yes.
And you sent me the link, and then this morning it blew up because it's funny what blew up is the comment at the very end, which I actually wrote about on my notes last night. And then when it blew up this morning, and then I listened to a podcast about them discussing it, and it was one of Charlemagne's best friends, Andrew Schultz, discussing it. So let's talk about it. Go ahead and tell us. You sent me the article. Tell me about it.
So the article was basically all about the last comment, right? And that's where Joe Biden said, if you can't decide between me and Trump, you ain't black.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what I did was before I got into that small snippet, I went back and watched the whole 20-minute video.
Right.
Okay. And Joe Biden was just feeding Charlemagne a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
Did not let Charlemagne talk.
Right.
He was very disrespectful. He kept throwing in slang.
Yeah.
Right. And Charlemagne wasn't even talking to him in slang.
Yeah.
He was being very professional, and Joe Biden assumed that because Charlemagne the God is black, that he needs to act and portray a certain image, which he did horribly.
Mm-hmm.
And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that was something I wrote, is that I like when politicians come on to the Breakfast Club because and I've been a fan of Charlemagne for a long time. So I'm going to refer to him as Charla, since we're good friends and all. The Breakfast Club has started interviewing more mental health politicians, just a wide variety besides rappers, because of Charla's request to do that. And I like seeing politicians be interviewed by him because he is more laid back. He has this, he's very intelligent. He knows what he's talking about. He is often on other political news platforms discussing the pop culture side and the black voice side of politics. So I think he's respected from people, but it also takes their guard down, right? And so then I did notice that with Joe Biden yesterday, that he seemed more relaxed, that he a little bit of his personality comes through. I wrote, he's an ass.
Oh, he definitely based
on
that.
And I put, come on, man, in quotes, because he kept saying, come on, man, come on, man. Who are you fucking talking to?
Right, because you sure as hell would not say that to another white politician.
Right, or white interviewer. Come on, man, come on. I hate it. He said it the entire 18 minutes. Like, don't talk to Charlemagne like that. And that at the very end, so I wrote, the end, ? What do you think? Me versus Trump, you are black. Last night, I didn't like it.
Right.
This morning, listening to a different point of view from Andrew, where Andrew is saying, look, Diddy said it a few months ago, and Black Twitter went off about, well, the black votes aren't free anymore. You need to tell us what you want. We're not just voting Democrat just to vote Democrat. That they feel like the Democratic Party has used black voters and then never given them anything in return.
Correct. I agree with that.
And I also know that I've said, you know, 4 years ago, as a woman, if you voted for Trump, you're a shitty woman. If you're going to vote for a man that can rape us or do this or that, whatever. He didn't actually rape. I shouldn't say he raped somebody. I don't know if he has sexually assaulted, whatever. But me, myself, said, as a female, I'm not voting for him. What's the difference between Joe Biden saying, if you vote for Trump, who is a racist, according to some people, then you ain't black. Like, you're not understanding our struggle. So there's a part of me that is like, okay, I can get what he was saying there. I don't know if I'm mad at him anymore about it.
You know, I'm not mad at him. I'm just saying he just nailed the, put the nail in his coffin.
You think so?
I mean, yeah. That is so rude and it's so disrespectful. And especially since the Democratic Party's talked about how much politically correctness is needed to be in the office. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden wasn't politically correct.
Yeah, no, he wasn't at all.
He wasn't being respectful. And in his apology, he was trying to say that Charlemagne was being a wise guy. Fuck you, Charlemagne wasn't being a wise guy. He was questioning you, calling you out on your fucking shit that you refused to say you fucked up. Because there was one part, they were talking about stuff with Hillary, that Hillary came back and said, we made the wrong decision at that time.
Right.
With that, what we did was wrong, the and we're trying bill. To learn
right.
from. Right. And Joe's like, nope. What you don't understand, what you don't know is da da da.
Right.
Charlemagne's like, I'm looking at the fucking polls. I'm looking at the statistics.
Right. And I did think, so, you know, Joe Biden talked a lot during the interview.
Oh my God.
And so, for his apology to say that Charlotte was being a wise guy and so he was just matching energy, I don't agree with, because he barely got to speak. He would ask one question and Joe Biden talked a lot. And at the end, what Charlotte was saying was, hey, when this is done, man, come up to the Breakfast Club, because this wasn't long enough. And we still, as the selected Democratic Party candidate, we still have a lot to talk about. And Black voters need to hear more from you. This 18-minute clip was not enough. And if you want to be on one of the largest platforms for the Black community, which The Breakfast Club is an international syndicated show, then bring your ass to New York and let's talk this out. The way that Hillary has, the way that Bernie has, the way that everybody else did, come up here. And Joe was like, basically was like, no, this is good, man. This is good. If you're voting for Trump, then you ain't Black. No, do your work. They deserve for you to come and sit down and give them the time the same way you would do in some fucking white city town hall meeting that you record.
Right. Oh, no, I totally agree with you.
So that's the part that makes me mad. Like, that very last part when he was like, no, this is good enough. Fuck you.
Yeah,
Charlemagne
said, you can't do this to Black media. And he's right, because he was shuffling him off the air. And it's like, oh, my wife has got to go on. What do you mean the fuck you mean your wife's got to go on? You got another computer in that goddamn house. She can air from somewhere else. Why are you cutting your interview short? That was just some propaganda bullshit. And he used Charlemagne as his puppet. And I'm going to read to you what the BET co-founder Robert Johnson said. He said that Joe Biden should apologize to every Black person he meets. Joe Biden's statement represents the arrogant and out-of-touch attitude of a paternalistic white candidate who has the audacity to tell Black people, the descendant of slaves, that they are not Black unless they vote for him.
Right.
And he's right. This Democratic candidate is assuming Black people are just going to vote for them blindly, because that's mainly what they've done a lot of times in the past.
Right, which Charlotte, he said it in the interview, that he said, don't you feel like the Democratic Party has taken advantage of Black voters, that they promise a lot and they get our vote, and the Black vote has gotten the Democrats in, and there's been no return, and that they're done with that.
As they should be.
100%. And I agree with that. And I know, again, that I was guilty of that 4 years ago, because Hillary was a woman and I wanted a woman president. I felt like I had to vote for a woman. Women support women, blah, blah, blah. It's not a guarantee. And what I think this did guarantee is that Joe Biden's running mate will be a Black female.
Well, he wouldn't even guarantee that. He wouldn't even guarantee that a woman would be his running mate. So
I think it will now.
No.
You don't think it, you don't think so? I think no.
Because
they gotta make up for it.
That slicky motherfucker is gonna talk about, oh, we're calling it down to Kamala Harris and these other few black women. But when rubber meets the fucking road, he's going to pick a white man just fucking like him.
You think so?
Oh, no. Yeah.
The worst mistake ever, yeah.
Joe Biden is just spewing bullshit. That's it. Mm-hmm. He's just running his fucking mouth. It's ridiculous. Right. You know, and you know what I don't, you mentioned, you know, because Hillary was there, and women support women, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't blindly support someone because they're the same gender as you or they're the same race as you.
I agree. Like I said, I was wrong in that thought and, you know, blindly following anybody just because they're the same color, sex, or whatever, or the, you know, my own personal agenda.
Right.
I mean, I was wrong. Yeah, for sure.
But I don't like that the Democratic Party thinks that they can use that as a political strategy.
Because they have, yeah, for years.
Right.
For decades.
And it's so insulting to the American people.
Right. You know, you think about the Democratic Party that normally it is, lower, you know, maybe middle class to lower middle or lower class. You know, they believe in, you know, spreading out wealth and helping each other, when the truth of the matter is the rich gets richer, and the votes that you're getting from these poorer communities, you're not helping them. You base a lot of platforms and a lot of fucking talk about it, mm-hmm. and you do not help them. And that's what they're saying that they're fucking tired of. And Sharla has been talking about this for the last year, is that he is done with that. And he's not going to have conversations with people that's guaranteeing his vote. Tell me what you can do for me and people that look like me.
Right.
And I'll tell you if you get my vote.
Exactly.
But we're not guaranteeing it anymore.
No, as they shouldn't. And you know, right. You know what the Democratic Party reminds me of? The sixth grade voting. I'm going to get us pizza every single day in the cafeteria. Recess right. all day long. You vote me in, no more classes. That's right. what I fucking hear.
I think the part that makes me frustrated then is, so then who do they vote for? Because that's what Andrew asked Alex on Flagrant 2 today is, well, he said, well, is he wrong? Are you going to vote for Trump? And he was like, fuck no, he's racist. And then he was like, so you're voting for the Democrat. And he was like, you know, what choices do you have then?
Well,
and can you feel good about that vote? Because whether or not Donald Trump is a racist, I don't feel comfortable just labeling him that and saying he is 100%. I know he says some sideways shit that people are like, ugh.
I gotcha. But what they need to do is they need to go back and look at the changes that Trump has made, not the shit that's in the media. Don't go watch
right.
news. Fucking go on the internet, Google all the shit that Trump has done, really research it, and go back and research the shit that Biden did in office as VP and compare the two. And see,
well,
not
just office, but that's what Charlemagne was calling him out on, is that the changes that Hillary Clinton and Biden and everybody in this crime bill from the 80s and early 90s, all of that is what put all these black men and black women in jail for marijuana and drug laws and put these minimums on them.
Right.
And who's been responsible for getting them out? It has been Trump.
Yep. And
so
Kim
where
Kardashian.
I would. Yeah, and Kim Kardashian, who I know we talked about before. So I'm becoming a bigger fan of Trump, but I like to give people credit for what they've done. And he has done that. And if Trump was on my phone right now, what I would tell him is use this opportunity right now to tell black voters what you will do for them.
And I believe
he will. And say to them, I want to earn your vote. I want to earn your vote, and this is how I'm going to do it.
Right. Well, you,
because if not, they're not just going to give it to him.
No,
they're not.
They're not.
They need to hear the things that he's actually done. And he needs to go on the Breakfast Club. He needs to go into a community center and talk to them and say, listen, this is the actual truth. This is what I've been doing, and that I do care.
Right. And I believe he will. If you've also noticed, Trump hasn't started campaigning yet.
Well, no, he can't. He is working to save our country and working to get us through this pandemic and everything else. So, you know, the campaign, I think, is the least of his worries at this point.
Right. Especially since Biden's going out there mumbling a bunch of crazy bullshit.
I
mean,
I was surprised
he's
that Biden
himself at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, for the first time for him to come out and this be the interview, it was not a good look for him.
No, it was not.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. His apology was half-assed.
It was horrible.
It really did blame, like, I matched energy. So it.
That's not an apology. That's an excuse.
No. Yeah. We'll see how that all goes.
Yeah. Crazy.
So, Lori Loughlin.
Yes.
Is that how you say her name?
Yeah, I think
Aunt Becky from Full House.
Uh-huh.
And her husband have pled guilty.
They have, which is good. Now, here's my question. So she has to spend 2 months in prison and pay $150,000 and 2 years suspended, or 2 years supervised release and 100 hours community service. Her husband, 5 months in prison, $250,000, 2 years supervised release, and 250 hours of community service. So why is his sentence so much longer than hers?
Well, I'm going to assume that his signature was maybe on more of the documents, right?
Oh,
like,
okay.
Same thing with Joe Giudice and Teresa Giudice from The Real Housewives of New Jersey. When they were found to have been guilty of tax evasion, because Joe was the one who signed most of the documents, he got a longer prison sentence than Teresa.
Gotcha.
But Teresa is the famous one, so that's the one we heard about the most.
Right.
So they're not, I didn't even write the fucker's name down, because all he is Lori Loughlin, Aunt Becky's husband.
Right, and apparently he's a fashion designer.
Yeah, who cares? If he's not fucking Ralph Lauren, we don't fucking know who he is.
No, Gia Anna or something like that. And they got a count of conspiracy to commit wire and mail fraud. And then he got conspiracy to commit wire and mail fraud and honest service wire and mail fraud. I don't know what that means.
No, but I think I find it interesting, because if you watch the documentary McMillan about McMillions about the McDonald's Monopoly game,
right?
What they actually end up charging with them too, it always comes down to mail fraud. It is easier, and the time served, even if you have stolen all this money,
uh-huh,
there is such a large penalty for taking something that is a lie and sticking it in an envelope and mailing it to somebody. If you do that, you're fucking toast.
Really? Why?
It's such a big, they explain it a little bit on McMillions. And if you haven't watched that yet, you should, because
okay,
it is based out of Jacksonville and the Jacksonville FBI, which is pretty fucking cool. And the federal prosecutor is actually the father of somebody I've met. So I've met him before, and they talk a little bit about the fact that mail fraud comes with a higher penalty. That's the way they hook them.
Huh. That's interesting. Well, they should have a higher penalty. I mean, they're stealing money.
Right. Right.
So part of this was that the guy who was running it, Singer, had 50 or more parents involved and who were paying millions of dollars to get their kids in college. And then their daughters were not accused of any wrongdoing, which I find a little upsetting. One, because they're adults, they took the pictures, they knew what was going on. So why are we not holding them accountable as well? Because if I'm not mistaken, it's their signatures on those college applications.
Well, it's the children were penalized by they had to reapply to the school. So it was actually a big deal when the one I remember made it in the news that she was accepted to the school. I think no different than what I said last week about the University of Kentucky cheerleading team is that these two parents were advising two minors, whether they were 18 when they became seniors or not, they were following the lead of their parents. And to penalize a child for that is extreme. I would not feel right to throw an 18-year-old in for something that mom and dad controlled and said, hey, I have a solution for you. That comes to leadership in the hierarchy where you have to penalize from the top down.
Okay.
To penalize a child, whether or not legally they were 18, that seems extreme, Debbie.
I know, but it's still fraud. Their name was on, yeah. I mean, same way we just talked about, the dad's signature was on most of those documents. He got a higher penalty. The girl's signatures were on those college applications where it has a statement that all this information is true and honest. And, you know, they signed it knowing it wasn't. So them being kicked out and then having to reapply, I think, is a fucking bullshit response. I think they should have been expelled, not allowed to reply to that college. It should have been blasted everywhere and then maybe seen if they could get into another college. But just allowing them to reapply doesn't teach them anything.
Right. I think the good thing is that they were accepted to the college or whatever college they applied for, which just means, like, look, mommy and daddy didn't have faith in you and you could have got in to begin with.
Yeah.
And all of this could have been avoided if you just trusted your child.
Right. Or right? Children.
So that to me, it's like a slap in the face of, well, we didn't have to lie. Like, I was good enough.
Yeah. I can see it from that side.
Yeah.
You know?
So I know I didn't put it on my notebook thing, but did you watch the soap opera thing?
I got through an hour of it, and then like the last 17 minutes, my internet started fucking up, so I ended up not finishing. But, so I know I had messaged you and said, you know, I told you I don't like soap operas. But I used to watch them a lot as a kid. You know, so you'd come home, me and mom would watch soap operas. Watch the ABC, All My Children, One Life to Live, and General Hospital. Those were the three ones. And let me tell you what, so I'm watching it, and I'm going through, and then Sunny comes on there, and I'm like, Sunny! I got so excited. I was like, I remember you.
You must have watched it then the same time I was. So I grew up, too, on the ABC show. So by the time I'd get home from school at 2 o'clock, it would be One Life to Live and then General Hospital.
Or wait, then where was One Life to All My Children? Because there was three.
All My Children was just... I think All My Children is
One Life to Live, All My Children, General Hospital. I don't know what the General
Hospital. All My Children started at 1 o'clock. One Life to Live started at 2 o'clock. And then General Hospital started at 3. And then 4 o'clock was normally Oprah or whatever it was. Right. It was talk show time. So I could never catch it enough to get All My Children. But I did watch One Life to Live in General Hospital.
Right.
And same thing, when I started to watch this documentary you had told me about, or this little series, it's just a one episode series, same thing, I saw Sonny and I was like, oh, there's Sonny, because he was a big character in the late 90s.
And
still on the show.
And he hasn't changed. That motherfucker looks the exact same.
He does. And hold on, I'm trying to find the name of the show that we're talking about. So,
which one was he on?
He was on General Hospital, but the show that you and I are talking about, it's called The Story of Soaps.
Yes.
And it's a documentary series, and we watched it on Hulu.
Yep.
It did make me nostalgic of being a kid or a teenager and watching these series on a daily basis. And these characters, like Luke and Laura...
Right. But now, when we watched Luke and Laura, they were older, so we didn't watch the Luke and Laura of the 70s.
Right. So what I thought was really cool is that the Luke and Laura of the 70s, and they mentioned it briefly that their wedding was recorded and broadcast online. Their fictional wedding.
Yes. And
it had more viewers than Princess Diana's wedding.
It did. And what I'm trying to look for the number, because I wrote it down. Biggest couple marriage, greatest wedding of all time. And I think it was like 35 million people watched that wedding. And they even said it was the greatest wedding of all time. No offense, royals.
Yeah, because it was not broken until Meghan Markle's wedding. So it took how many fucking years, decades and decades,
right,
for that viewing to get more. I like that. So if anybody knows the General Hospital story and Luke and Laura, it's when we started watching it, they had kids, right?
Right.
They already had a son. They were older. It was easy to forget
what
that he had raped her in the 70s.
It wasn't easy for us to forget. We had no concept of it.
Right. But I thought it was interesting that we forgave him, right? Because Luke and Laura, still in the 90s, was such a huge power couple, and everybody was rooting for them. But then the way that the soaps had learned in the 70s that it was fine, he raped her and let's have this big romance, that 20 years later, that the soap felt like it was necessary to reapproach it with it wasn't Robin, it was their son's girlfriend got raped, and Laura mentored and talked to her about it,
right,
about her own rape, and then it showed scenes of her screaming at Luke.
Yes, it did.
20 years later, saying, you raped me and you hurt me and this isn't okay, and I'm getting chills just talking. Like, it progressed, and the soap operas are so great about that, of progressing with the times.
Right. They are, because they take all of their stories from the headlines. And I did, like, I noted here that the director at the time, Gloria Monty, she got told the show was going to be canceled if the ratings didn't go up. Now, mind you, this was also one of the most top rating soap operas, but she got threatened mm-hmm. with this. So they made what was called rape seduction, right? What we would
right.
consider date rape today. And the show became popular of it. Luke did it from love. Women accepted it at this point and said it was okay because they ended up getting married. And then there was this article about rape, romance, and ratings. And they did confront it in 1998, saying to America that it was wrong. And then I wrote down, if the stories are ripped from the headlines, is it no wonder women don't tell their rape stories when we're watching on TV a soap opera about a woman who's getting raped, who ends up marrying the man, having children with it, and it makes it okay? There was no consequence to Luke.
Right.
And that was the message. Essentially, we were teaching all our girls who this was a tradition that moms and daughters in the afternoon after came home from school and they were watching this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's such a mental mind fuck
yeah.
that they did to us.
Yeah. And I like that the actress even said that, you know, she found it difficult, that she knew that even at the time in the 70s, that she was justifying it.
Right.
And that it, you know, she would be interviewed and she would have to justify it as part of her job. But that's what women during those times justified it. And they had to justify it. You have to justify it, even as a career woman, where it didn't happen to Jean, it happened to Laura. She mentally had to justify it verbally over and over again.
Right.
What a mental
mind fuck.
Yeah, for her to have to be okay with it on a national platform and talk about that it's okay, because look, we got a fairy tale after all.
Right.
I love that General Hospital allowed her 20 years later to scream, "You raped me."
Right.
And it's not fucking okay.
Yep.
that fairy tale was not fucking okay. Like, yeah, we're okay now, but it was fucked up. And that they allowed Luke to say, I'm sorry. Like, I know that it was bad. Right. Because maybe as a man 20 years ago, or, well, back then, now we're talking 50 years ago, he didn't realize
right
what he was doing was wrong, right? Right. But in 1996, 97, 98, he could see it and understand it.
Right, and he apologized for it. And I think the biggest part that I have with this, and I still, mind you, it's in the 70s, but it is a woman writer who wrote the rape of another woman.
Yeah.
There was no men involved in that.
No, not at all.
Can't blame a man for this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like, too, that they talked about how women liked powerful men,
uh-huh,
and that most soap stars, males, are powerful men.
Right.
Which I'm super attracted to, a very powerful, but in a certain way. Like, I love a Sonny Corinthos, but I love that Sonny is broken and he's vulnerable to Brenda. You remember Brenda was the only one.
That's her
like
name.
Like, you're smiling when I say your name. It was Brenda and Carly. I loved Sonny and Carly together, mm-hmm, too, the blonde. But he could be himself to her, which is similar to Nate. When I first met Nate, like, everybody said, oh, he's such an asshole. Well, to me, he was so good to me, and he opened up to me, and he would talk to me. But then you like this strong man that maybe he is a dick, and maybe he likes things a certain way. And it made me also think, which I don't think they mentioned, is what strong females.
Oh, absolutely. Well, before you jump onto that, I did like that Sonny was actually had bipolar. And they wrote, mm-hmm, that into the storyline so he could really express what he was going through and made a platform for people to become aware of it.
Right, because the actor that plays Sonny, who we will never know his real name.
I think it's Maurice or something.
I don't know. He'll always be Sonny Corinthos to me. That they took his bipolar disorder and put it into the show so that they could talk about it, which, you know, again, at that time, mental health, until recently, just wasn't an issue, right? You were just an angry person.
Right.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, strong women. Erica Kane. Oh, I fucking Erica love fucking Kane. Erica Kane.
So teenage years, General Hospital, my mom and Lola were all into ABC soaps. When I spent a year living with Jamie, her mother was dedicated to the CBS shows. So Bold and the Beautiful, As the World Turns,
right.
All those different shows that were based on, Young and the Restless. Most of Bold and the Beautiful and Young and the Restless are all based on these big businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then the drama and the family that goes around it. What I can think of now when I was watching this is how many of those daughters were powerhouses in those businesses.
Yeah.
And it's all I can remember. Erica Kane being a fucking powerhouse. Vicky from One Life to Live, you know, the older lady, being a fucking powerhouse. Carly being a fucking powerhouse. Even Laura had these men eating from her fucking hands and listening to everything she said.
Right.
That soap operas really have built. Yeah, you get these weird fucking kills and this person comes back to life, right, and this person has an evil twin.
Yeah, but always
they
evil
really
twin.
Dig into it.
Right. It's just, I love it all.
When they were talking about AIDS,
yes,
and Robin and her husband or her boyfriend, which was Sonny's little brother, and they showed some pictures of that. I can remember just being wrapped into that.
Yep.
Coming
out as
the
gay.
Coming out as gay. Erica Kane having the first abortion.
Yep.
On television.
There was a lady who got pregnant in the 70s or the early 80s.
Oh, so she played, you're talking about, she plays on Young and the Restless.
And she wasn't married. And they used that in the storyline, but What happened was she ended up getting all kinds of support, which she wasn't expecting because it wasn't heard of at that point to be single and being pregnant.
Yes, you're talking about Victor Newman's wife. The actress's name is Melody Scott. What the fuck is her name? It's Victor and what best known as everybody else will know it. You won't because you watch ABC. And I only know of this because of my quick stint. But anyways, that's who you're talking about is Victor Newman's wife, Melody Scott. She started off as a stripper.
Okay.
On the show that then meets Victor Newman and gets this new life. And you're right where she said she thought she was going to be attacked for the decisions that her character made. Instead, women supported her.
Was it her character or was it her? Because I thought they said she had actually gotten pregnant.
Oh.
Or, yeah, she literally got pregnant single in the early 80s. And she started getting all these gifts from fans and stuff start showing up. And everyone was really supportive.
You're right. You're right about that. That was in her personal life. I know in the show, eventually, the baby comes back that she had put up for adoption.
Okay.
In the show.
On the show.
That was, yeah, that was years later. But yeah, and also the way that when it's back in the day, they would really go and travel around the soap stars and show up at malls, and there would be fucking flocks.
There'd be festivals. I didn't know there were soap opera festivals.
Yeah.
Like, I did not realize how obsessed these people were about their shows.
Mm-hmm. And I like that somebody, and it makes sense to me, and that's what I wrote in my note of why I like reality TV. When the gentleman said soap operas were the original source of binge watching. It's something that we didn't have to wait a week to watch. It was every single day at 3 o'clock. I had to check. Where's Jason? God, I love Jason. When Jason, remember Jason was Sonny's sidekick? He was a Quartermain, but then got a brain concussion. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Where
he always wore like black t-shirts and was really ripped. And yeah, look, she's smiling. You should see her.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, okay. I love Jason. Okay. He was a Quartermain and got some type of brain contusion and memory loss. And then he started working with Sonny. No, he's never got, I don't know if he got his memory back, but ever since then, he's been ride or die for Sonny and like walked away from the Quartermain fortune and all of that. But yeah, I couldn't wait every day at 3 o'clock
to watch
this show. And so it's no wonder why I like reality TV, and because the truth is reality TV is a shit show, just like soap operas were at some point.
So I do like, and this is just going to be weird because I don't like reality TV and I don't like soap operas anymore. Like, I can't sit down and watch them anymore. I enjoyed them when I was younger and like the old ones, maybe because of how old I was when I was watching it and the connection. But now I'm just kind of like, I can't do this. Like, I remember a time in my life where I was probably about the time I was about turning 18. I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I was like, something switched in me. Like, even though I got super excited about Jason and Sonny and all of that, like somewhere along the line, something switched. And when I watch them now and I'm like, oh my God, really? Oh my.
Maybe your tolerance for bullshit.
Maybe that's what it is. But yeah. I do like how they said that the OJ trial destroyed soap operas. And it really did. Because this is real drama. They can't compete with the real drama. The soap operas now became real life.
Right. And I never thought about the fact that when the OJ trial was going on, there was nothing worse than when there was like a special news broadcast and our fucking soap operas didn't play that day. Because you'd miss a whole episode. They weren't going to fill you in. Tuesday's episode was still going to play on Tuesday. Wednesday's was going to be. So if there was an emergency in the world, we didn't get to watch our fucking soap operas that day. And when the O.J. Simpson trial and all of that was happening, it took over all TV. And so then people became engrossed in, like you said, real life drama. That's when the creation of Court TV started. That's the creation of
reality
of filming
TV.
People's real life. Yeah. So and that became the death of soap operas.
So here is something that's interesting. Did you know that Robert Kardashian was the attorney for OJ? Okay, so
I didn't
realize. I was like, Robert Kardashian. I'm like, is that the one that became a woman? Because I was asking Dion, and he's like, no, that's Bruce Jenner. And he's like,
that's what Ethan asked.
No, that's the dad. I was like, but wait, he's like, no, Bruce isn't the dad. I was like, okay. So is it no wonder that Robert Kardashian's children now have a reality TV, considering he was the attorney on the first reality TV show?
Yeah, it's a, you know, what is it? It's just kind of the circle of life, right? Where he was a part of it, which is why to me it makes sense to see Kim transition to law, because maybe if whoever released that sex tape of her never did that, maybe she would have become an attorney 15 years ago, just like her strong, powerful father.
And I like what they said, that it's we now have a 24 cycle of news, and we've gotten addicted to it. We are news serialized, mm-hmm. very much like soap operas. People are now addicted. And then my question is, because of we've realized that making news serialized and exposing all this drama, I wonder if that's the reason why we have embellished and fake news now. Right? Like, we've pushed it past mm-hmm. because OJ trial was not embellished. It was simply the facts. And at that point, simply the facts was enough tantalizing, scandalous topic that, you know, got us addicted. But that was in the 90s. If we hear about a trial like that now, we're like, eh, we're bored with it. So do we need to keep making up false news or embellishing it so we can keep getting these ratings, and we're moving further and further from the truth?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes, because that's what sells, right? If the transition from fake reality of soap operas to real reality to now reality TV, because what they said was reality TV works because it's more profitable. You don't have to create sets and these beautiful outfits that they wear in these big elaborate homes when they're crazy fucking people. Yeah, that do it. Yeah, you don't have to write the stories. The truth is that there's these fucking nut jobs that are willing to have us film their lives. And then when their lives aren't crazy enough, they start adding to it. And that's when reality TV becomes, well, is this fake or not? Because now they're just being fucking absurd because they realize they will benefit from it. So then reality becomes false and news becomes false because we all enjoy it.
Our entertainment has become our news, which is why it's so sad, because most of us are so misinformed about everything because we're not getting the facts anymore. Like, news is not meant to be sensationalized. It's to provide you with real information about what's going on, no matter how boring it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do like how they were like, throughout the whole thing, you know, it's a women's entertainment. Nobody paid them any real attention. And then they built this whole fucking empire, right? And in the early days, men were like, I don't watch soap. Oh, that's just her. That's her soap operas, you know, blah, blah, blah. When really, men were fucking watching soap operas. Game of Thrones is a soap opera. Breaking Bad is a soap opera. Anything you're watching on TV today, man, you're fucking watching a soap opera. You're welcome.
Yeah, for sure. I like that they talked about that too, how daytime drama and then transition to nighttime drama, of the creation of Dallas, the creation of 90210, mm-hmm. Melrose Place, Desperate Housewives. Like you said, Game of Thrones, any of those, it truly is just a dramatized series like we were all watching. I mean, I watched the fucking zombie movie let's be honest, somebody might be dead. Somebody might have gotten sucked into a helicopter at this point. That's not reality. It's the same fucking thing as Nicholas Cassadine and the Cassadine family coming back and them being the bad guys, and Stefan's not really dead, but maybe he's got a twin brother. Give me a break. We do that shit all the time on evening TV.
So men are not immune from soap operas, and don't pawn it off like it's some women thing.
Yeah, for sure. It happens on Fast and the Furious. Well, I thought he was dead. Well, no, that's so-and-so's brother now. He's the bad guy. Same thing. The Cassadines did that shit in the 90s on General Hospital.
So when we think we're watching something new and entertaining, you're not. And
yeah. Now, I will say that the documentary made me feel the same way you did, like nostalgic about it. Like, oh, I remember just loving this stuff. I loved it. I watched it with my mom. My mom and I talked about it. When I would pass the grocery store and see the covers of the Soap Opera Digest, I'd be interested to see when I saw, you know, Sonny or Brenda and Carly on the cover, and who is he going to end up with? And I was all into it.
And you know what
it.
Else
loved...
was really great was you'd be at the grocery store and someone would see you looking at it, and you'd have a random conversation with some lady about what was going on, like she was your best fucking friend ever. I was like, oh my God, did you see what happened? No, oh my God, please don't tell. Oh my God, you got to go watch it. It's so fucking up, you know, the whole... Like, and I love that BCRs were created because of soap operas.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jamie's mother, Alma, did not fuck around when it came to her BCR. She recorded 2.5 hours, because Bold and the Beautiful is only a 30-minute show, of soap operas every fucking day. The same tape, she'd rewind, record. Every day when she came home, she would eat her dinner and then sit in her recliner, and nobody was to make a fucking sound.
Sounds like my mom.
She was going to watch her 2.5 hours, fast forward through the commercials, and get it in. And Jamie said she still does it.
My mom still watches soap operas.
Yeah, I was watching it when I worked at my old company, because the lady in my office would watch it in our conference room during her lunch. So then, even though I hadn't seen a CBS soap in 10 years, that's the beauty of soap operas. You can go back in quickly learn, okay, well, that's so-and-so's son now, or that's so-and-so's granddaughter, and so-and-so still even might be on the show. Same thing, when you first sent me this documentary in the beginning of quarantine, I looked up General Hospital on Hulu, and instantly... some of them are still there, and then it's just figuring out who's kid
is who.
You
know what would be really cool to do? And it would require a lot of time. But we should find all the General Hospitals from the beginning and watch the whole fucking thing. We should watch 30 years of a soap opera.
I can't even imagine how much time that would take, because there is... an episode a day. And I like that they talked about how fucking hard soap operas are, right? That there are a lot of Hollywood actors that, and they wouldn't mention who it was that fucking said, I can't do this. I quit.
Oh, no. But let me tell you, because I wrote down all the names. Julianna Moore, Kelly Ripa, Demi Moore, Brad Pitt, Alex Baldwin, Vivica Fox, John Stamos, Denise Richardson, obviously Susan Lucci. She's the best. Ryan Felipe was on there. I mean... if you're almost anyone and anyone in Hollywood, you've been on a soap opera. And
the guy from This Is Us, that whoever the young brother is, he started on a soap opera. A lot of times Nate and I are watching a show or a movie and I'll be like, oh, that's so-and-so from this soap opera that I used to watch. That's so-and-so from this soap opera that I used to watch.
Yeah, see, I didn't make the connection between who they were and the soap opera. This was like the light bulb going off. And then, like you said, they would do 47 scenes in one day. They would basically do a movie every single day. And it was great training. And they basically said, if you can handle this, you can handle anything. Because it was very fast. It was very demanding. And there were no rules. So if you felt like bitch slapping someone, you got to bitch slap them.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the thing where it was like, it's so funny when people say, well, it was so dramatized.
Was it?
Well, is it though? Because I've seen Real Housewives slap each other. I've seen little midgets on these midget shows we all watch fucking slap each other. Like, it's real life.
I can imagine. I mean, if I was put in some of those positions, I'd probably slap a bitch too.
Right. Right. And Kelly Ripa, the cool thing about her, so she was on All My Children, and she came in as a when I was watching it as a teenager, as like a problem child. She came and I think she's related to Vicky in some way, and or maybe she's related to Erica. Either way, one of the top powerful women. And that's where she met her husband. Her husband, was already on the show too. And they connected them as the minority guy and the trouble white girl. And they even like ran away together at some point and had this romance and then ended up falling in love. And they've been together since the 90s. But that's where they met was on All My Children.
That's really cool. That is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And then 55% of women watch soaps, and it was 35 million people. That's crazy.
Wow.
35.
Yeah. Yeah, they're great. It's sad to see them go. I know there's still a few on air. It's sad to see them go. They've been around so long.
Because it's transitioned into the reality TV. Those are your soaps. Right. You know, it's...
And I wonder if when our older generation, because I think maybe you and I might be the last generation of people that have watched it from the younger times, that as the people that are 50, 60, 70, 80 pass away, will the shows disappear too? Because who's really watching TV at 2 o'clock in the afternoon?
Right. And that was the one things they talked about was towards the 80s, women were working, they were out of the homes, you know, because that's why they were on daytime television, because the advertisers knew they could not advertise to women during the evening, because that's when the husbands came home, the children were home from school, preparing dinner, taking care of the family. So most of the time TV wasn't on. And so that's why they put soap operas on during daytime, and then they put all these advertisements in it, which is how it got so popular and created so much money, because advertisers knew that women controlled almost 90% of the household budget. So they were targeting them. And then towards the 80s, when women were migrating out of the household and into the workforce, this is why we have the technology for the VCR to record it, because the advertised companies were still putting the money in, because even if they were recording it, they were still seeing the advertisements.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. You think it's going to die away then?
It's transitioning. It's going to change form. So where we watch the transformation of a radio soap opera into a television soap opera from the 40s and the 50s, and we stayed with a television soap opera for 70 years, right? Mm-hmm. Now it's transitioning into reality TV, and the people who follow the reality TV at a younger age are going to follow that through until reality TV transforms into something else, and that with its generations are going to die out, and that next generation will pick it up, something new. Because I think part of the nostalgic of it for us is also the age that we were exposed to it. If we were just exposed to it today, we might not be so inclined to fall in love with it or have this feeling for it, because we have so much other stuff going on. But because we were young and we fell in love with these characters, it's very nostalgic for us, right? We have this connection. And that was one of the things they said was, these characters were like family because they were in your living room every single day. It wasn't like the news or any other nighttime TV. It was, they were here every day, and they were dealing with issues that women dealt with in real life, but nobody was brave enough to say on the news.
I think too, like, I think you're right when you said, you know, when we were watching it, specifically General Hospital, when we were watching it back in the day, they did such a great job of knowing that the show came out at 3 o'clock. So us high school kids were home by 2:30. And at that time it was Brenda and Jason, and I can remember them all being in high school and me being even a freshman and thinking mm-hmm. they were so cool, right? They were so neat. And Sonny was this older man that owned a strip bar, and how fucking crazy it was. Oh God. Or Karen was the first one I think that met Sonny, and just this, I don't know, there was this connection. And same thing with, I think, One Life to Live. At that time, they had them all in college. And so then, as a high schooler, looking at these college kids drinking, that then ended up in rape. And I remember, I can't remember the bad guy's name, this blonde guy, but he raped one of the girls on that show. And then that became a big deal. And it they really do connect to real life when you erase the bullshit of the identical twins and the bad twin and all this
right,
other
but
stuff.
But all so that it's bullshit, cool. It's what kept us coming back.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. When there was a fucking bus accident on General Hospital, when all the kids died, and then it was, oh, God, and so-and-so got what's-his-name's heart. Do you remember that? Oh, my God. I could just remember being in tears. And then General Hospital even did, like, a nighttime one-hour special at one point, and we were all fucking in. It was just, it's a great show. And so if anybody wants a little bit of nostalgic, I'd recommend checking out the docuseries. It's just about an hour and a half. I don't know if they're coming out with other episodes to call it a series.
I don't know
but,
either.
If they do, I'd like to see them break it down maybe per soap opera. Yeah. So we can get our fix.
Also, I do want to say one more thing that I do like about this was these shows provided an outlet for moms and daughters to watch and observe real life things happening and give the mothers and daughters an opportunity to talk about these real life issues, mm-hmm. you know, because if you're sitting there with your daughter and you're watching a rape scene, that is like the perfect moment to sit down and have a real heart to heart conversation with her about some serious shit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. If you had a better mom than I did, because I don't think my mom ever pointed that out to me, but I know as a teenager, it's stuck in my head like, oh, she went to this party, there's lots of alcohol, and this is what happened. Be aware of that situation. Keep yourself out of that situation. And it, yeah, I agree. They were learning moments.
They were huge learning moments. I think for a lot of us, it kept us out of trouble because we got to see firsthand what the basic real life consequence would be. And they didn't sugarcoat it.
No, not at all. Ever. I that's the great thing is as centralized and extreme as a soap opera is, that's kind of the benefit, right? Is they showed it all. The good and the bad, the glam and the poor, they showed it all.
Do you think you still get that with reality TV? Or today?
I think it depends on certain shows. There's, and you know, the thing about reality TV is it is reality, but then it's edited. It's edited into an hour or 30 minute show. So where you might miss, even me, like if you were to record my life and you see my big giant reactions, you're not seeing the consequences of my reactions of how the guilt I feel afterwards, or even what led me to that of my thinking and thought process. I think soap operas did a better job of that, and also showed soap operas did a great job of showing that people change, right? Luke changed. The guy that raped the girl on One Life to Live, years down the road, decades. I mean, it took a long time for people to forgive him, and I don't even think people still have, but he has these moments of humanity where you can say, okay, well, he was a 20-year-old kid, 19-year-old boy when that happened. Now he's a man, and there's been growth. Soap operas allow that, where reality TV and the reaction of all of us, we don't allow people to grow. We look at Kim Kardashian, she's always going to be a big booty slut that had a sex tape rather than a daughter of a lawyer who's trying to make a difference, right? Like, we're not
and
forgiving.
That's really sad because I think we are forgetting our own humanity as the audience.
Right. And I think, you know, it's we can put that on production because they don't show it.
They don't. And I think part of, like you said, it doesn't sell, right? Because right now it doesn't sell. Right now everybody just wants to be entertained, to hell with the consequences, and trophy, you know, participation trophies everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, well, that's all I have. I would say go and take a look at this docuseries. Watch the interview with Joe Biden. Let us know what you think. And everybody just stay safe out there. I think things are starting to go back to normal a little bit.
I heard Friday Virginia's opening back up. So that'll be good.
Good. Yeah. So everybody have fun. I'll see you this weekend.
Yes. In real life.
In real life. Excited to do that. So everybody have a good time or have a good weekend. Peace out. You want to say goodbyes?
Yep. As always, guys, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, give us a shout out at notasafespacepodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Bye, y'all.
Bye.